Welcome to the Catholic Cafe, where Catholic truth is served fresh daily. We've made you a reservation in the luxurious corner booth, so come on in and see what's on the menu today. Now, here's your host, Deacon Jeff Drzemski.
Greetings and welcome to the Catholic Cafe. I'm Deacon Jeff, sitting in the luxurious corner booth of the Catholic Cafe. I've got Venerable Tom Dorian here.
Hello.
Staring me down from across the table.
It's a nice stare, though.
This is staring me
it's
down
like
nicely.
It's like
no, it's not like evil. It's the opposite of evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, and then we've got Ziggy Rodriguez.
That's me.
Sam, so glad to have you here. The gang is all together. We're doing this Summer of Holy Matrimony. We have a lot of folks replying and or sending us emails. So I'm really excited that people like this.
Hopefully they're good emails.
Oh, they're all good.
Good.
There was one, but that's, you know, there's always an outlier.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, they really haven't had any bad emails.
That was from the Vatican, unfortunately.
So today.
But we continue on.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, until the Pope tells us
exactly.
to stop, right? So we just kind of spent some time talking about the marital embrace, and I want to kind of wrap that up today in this episode because there's a part of the marital embrace I think that a lot of people, I know there's an elephant in the room. I'll just say it that way. One of the things I've noticed when I'm preparing couples for marriage is that. Especially in a setting where there's a lot of folks out there. I'll be doing another a marriage prep workshop in the Diocese of Memphis, and there'll be somewhere around 20, 25 couples sitting in front of me, right? So like 50 people sitting out in front of me. And when I get to this part of the presentation, when we're talking about the marital embrace, there's a little, I don't want to say, it's not uncomfortableness, but nobody likes talking about sex, you know, and they wonder why this 60-year-old balding deacon is standing up there talking to him about this stuff. So I try not to make it weird, right, and try to make it, well, you know, we handle this topic, I think, well, and because there's something beautiful about what we're talking about, right, and I think they all know, some of them know way more than they're supposed to know at this stage, right, and what I'm referring to is I can, when I start talking about the realization that in my last 10 years of doing marriage prep in terms of the couples that I've encountered, I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb and guess that probably between 80 and 90% of them are cohabiting. Mm. I mean, they're living together. Mm-hmm. And so I realize that. And so when I get into these settings where there's a lot of couples, and even when there's like just one couple in front of me, I had one couple recently that I was preparing. And they were so chatty and just bubbly and happy and so looking forward to their marriage, and everything was, all the preparations, everything's going good. They're smiling, they're giggling, they're, you know, teasing each other, and you know, young couple in love. And then I started talking about cohabitation, and all of a sudden you could see this like 500-pound weight like pulling their face down to the ground. And there was a visible uncomfortableness with essentially, you know, you're getting caught with your hands in the cookie jar, right? And there's that look on your face like, I'm guilty, right? And so when I'm in a room with a lot of people, I can actually see a visible uneasiness with the conversation. So I'm very, very careful with how I present this. And so as we have all of our listeners out there now, I want to make sure that I repeat when I'm doing preparation, I repeat what I say at the very beginning and what we said at the beginning of this program, this series, like I guess 10, 12 episodes ago, saying that, like, look, there's no judgment here. You know, I am no saint, and I certainly am not going to judge people for actions. And so I repeat that here and say, like, look, let's just address the elephant in the room. Let's just talk about it for a second. And I think people, they're okay with that, but they're still uneasy because basically, you know,
you're calling them out.
Well, and they know, well, see, you say it that way, that's the way they perceive it.
Right.
What I'm trying not to do is call them out. Because I think that's a difficult place to be, and in fact, there's a recent document that came out from that came from the Vatican, but it was about this new catechumenate in marriage. It came out a couple of years ago, and it actually addresses cohabitation, and it actually says that you're supposed to go easy on those folks, and I'm very much paraphrasing, but not to make them feel like sinners,
Right?
So pointing your fingers and saying you're all living in sin is not the way to go. Mm-hmm. And I agree that that's not the way to go. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm a big fan of the teachings of the church. And I think there's a beautiful harmony in living out the teachings of the church, because God breathed his law into the church.
And to be clear, the church wasn't condoning that activity or saying that it was not sinful. What they were saying, they're trying to equip people like you with the tools necessary to effectively address the matter with people and not, you know, push them away by opening up by saying, like, you know, you could go to hell for this. You know, the church has been around for 2,000 years, and they know what's effective and what's not. And by the way, we might have a lot of listeners in this audience who have children who are in this situation as well.
Absolutely.
And so this could also be helpful to those parents and learning how to navigate this very sensitive topic.
Oh, and also kids. We've probably got listeners who, as parents, might have cohabited.
Yeah.
Right. So again, this is not a judgment, but it's like, what do we do with this? And that's why I refer to it as, you know, it's like we're just going to address the elephant in the room. We're just going to talk about all of this stuff and see it from a perspective that the church wants us to see what it means to live in perfect harmony with God's law, right? And when I say law, again, I don't want to sound like this harbinger of doom and the iron fist that comes clamping down upon, you know, your happiness.
No, it's like rules. You know, they're put in place to have fun, you know?
You know what?
It's not designed to...
I get that a lot, especially when I'm teaching RCIA. People say, like, why does the Catholic Church have so many rules? Mm-hmm. Right? And you think about that for a second, and you think, like, yeah, why is it so restrictive? Why is the Catholic Church always worried about what people are doing to have fun or things that are none of their business,
et cetera? More like guardrails.
Yeah, well, you know what? If you look at it that way and realize, I mean, that's the right way to look at rules. Mm-hmm. I like to say that, you know, the very first thing that God did when Adam and Eve were made, mm-hmm. I mean, literally the first thing he did was say, don't eat the fruit on that tree. I mean, he gave them a rule. Mm-hmm. That is the very first thing God did, is give them a rule. Not long after that, there were these 10 rules, right? The 10 commandments, or 15 if you believe Mel Brooks. Right? I don't know if you remember that movie. But anyway, so there's these 10 commandments. These are rules. Yeah. Thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not.
Yeah.
Right? And then we have the 613 laws of Moses. Mm-hmm. It, one after another, you start to see these regulations. And I love how you refer to them as guardrails, mm-hmm. Tom, because it's like, I the way I help people see, like when I'm teaching RCI, is like rules are not there to restrict. They're to give you freedom.
Right.
I mean, think about what it'd be like if you were trying to drive from, you know, across country, mm-hmm. from coast to coast. You want to drive there. What would it be like if there were no traffic laws, if there were no rules? I mean, you're taking your life into your hands, mm-hmm. because everybody's kind of doing their own thing. I don't know what's going to happen. And unless, you know, there's no lines on the road, there's no roads.
Right.
Right.
Or you're playing a game, baseball game, board game, whatever.
Right. And that's...
You got rules so that you can have fun.
That's exactly right. So that's the way I like to see all this stuff.
Well, and I think St. Thomas Aquinas shed some important light on these matters as well, where he says that when we choose to sin, we're choosing evil under the aspect of the good. And what he means by that is people rarely say, I'm choosing evil for evil's sake. Normally, when we sin, we're convinced that what we're doing is some kind of a good, and we're confused about, you know, that good. No, and the fact of the matter is, sex is a good, right? But when it's a lower good, when it's taken outside of marriage, when it's what you're actually doing is devaluing sex, you're devaluing your bodies, you're devaluing the you know, authentic intimacy in a relationship,
right?
You know, born from a relationship with God, right? And so what we're doing is, you know, we're choosing these lower goods, mm-hmm. you know, we're feeding the lower appetites. And so when God gives us rules, when he's asking us to say no to things, what he's asking us really to do is to choose the higher good.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important for us to, you know, like this morning, for example, like I've got a 12-hour workday ahead of me later today. And I didn't get much sleep last night, but a friend of mine, he called me You know, recently, and he asked if I could, if I would take him to Fishers of Men. He doesn't have a car right now. He's going through a tough time. You know what? I would have loved to have slept. I have loved to have slept. Fishers of Men is a men's morning organization. But at the end of the day, that would have been a lower good. This is a friend that I care about who's been going through a difficult time. He reached out to me, and he wanted to have some fellowship, some Christian fellowship. The higher good was making the choice to get my butt out of bed, regardless of whether I was sleepy.
We don't say butt on EWTN.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. To get out of bed to at 5:30 a.m., pick him up, and bring him to the fellowship meeting. And at the end of the day, I was choosing something. As much as my body might have been crying out for sleep, it fed the soul, and ultimately, as a result, also my body and every aspect of my being, to make the choice that God was calling me to make, to choose the higher good.
Yeah, and I know. And now, so we're saying higher good and lower good, and these are this is Thomas Aquinas talking.
Yeah,
so it's very theological and precise language. And so I don't want people to hear sex outside of marriage is still a lower good. So
no,
it's still good.
Yeah. It's
I know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, and I think you would agree, is that something good can become bad when it's outside the context in which it's intended.
Yes.
And that's what you're saying.
Yes.
It becomes a bad thing. And so just to be clear, I want people to know that, and I do address this with the couples in marriage preparation, is that it is sinful, right?
Yes.
And it's just you're not going to catch a lot of flies with vinegar, as the old saying goes, right? You, when you go in and you're saying like, wait, you guys are already doing this? Oh, no. That's sinful. You know what? You realize if you died today, you'd go straight to hell? This is not a good way to prepare. That's what the Vatican was saying in this catechumenate of marriage document. And that's what we do. And that's what I'm trying to reorient the couple.
Yeah,
right? and lead them in the right path.
And to build on the clarification you were saying, yeah, I mean, God created the universe, he declared it good, he declared us good. The desire for the things of the earth, it's our desires that throw things off. It's not creation that's bad, it's not sex that's bad, but when we have skewed desires that cause us to choose things in a way that's out of step with God's will, where we're wanting to take instead of receive. We're wanting to take things for ourselves, for our own reason, hey, this is pleasurable, right? Things like that, as opposed to putting God first,
right?
And allowing ourselves to be in a receive mode where we're receiving the gift of sexuality in the way that he intended.
So, but we do want to be clear, and that the church has always taught that cohabitation and also sex outside of marriage is not what God designed, and not what God intended, as you've just said in many, many words, Sam. Just kidding.
I got some more.
You do. I do not doubt that. But in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, in paragraph 2350, it says, those who are engaged to marry are called to live chastity incontinence. Now, incontinence means without sexual relationship, all right? They should see in this time of testing a discovery of mutual respect, an apprenticeship in fidelity, and the hope of receiving one another from God. They should reserve for marriage the expressions of affection that belong to married love. They will help each other grow in chastity. So it's a beautiful exercise, right? Now, when I say these things to couples that I'm preparing, it can be problematic because they're looking uneasy, right? And they're starting to feel judged. Even if you say, look, I'm not judging you. I promise you. I don't think less of you because this is the way of the world. You're in the midst of a culture that basically sees this as just, it's like, hey, let's go out to dinner and let's do this thing because everybody's doing this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's become very, 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 very commonplace. What I want people to understand is that when you're talking to people like this, you have to be careful because they're thinking, and they're not saying it out loud, they're thinking like, oh my goodness, I've ruined this already. Mm-hmm. I've already blown this. I've already messed this up. What if I'm to believe what he's saying, I've ruined our marriage because our potential marriage, because we've already been doing this thing that was reserved to marriage, And up to now, we've been talking about the theology of marriage, and we've talked about that intimacy that comes with marriage in marital love, and we're saying all these nice and flowery and beautiful things about it, and then but you've already blown it. In fact, there's a priest Father Charles Bauer, I'll just say his name, in the Diocese of Memphis. And I remember him making a comment with me. We were talking in the sacristy, and we were talking about marriage preparation. And we were talking about cohabitation. And he just said, like, you know, I just let the kids know that, like, they're having Christmas without the nativity. You know, okay. And it's like, I love that expression, because essentially it's like exchanging the gifts without the meaning of Christmas, without the beauty of the greatest gift ever given to us, which is Jesus. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, we're just, what if every day was Christmas, like that song says, you would hate Christmas, because it would just be every day. And in the same way, if every day for a couple that was in love and not married was having this this marital embrace outside of marriage, then it just becomes something that's mundane.
Mm-hmm. You know, reading the catechism quotation that you shared in terms of they're called to live chastity and continence, those who are engaged to marry. You know, continence, going back to St. Thomas Aquinas, actually has a pretty specific definition as a virtue, the virtue of continence, where it is you're checking the tumult of the will, right? So it's the virtue that allows you to keep that your will in check when it's out of control. So I mean, it doesn't just apply to things like sex and sexuality. If someone is a cigarette smoker who's addicted to cigarettes and they want to get off cigarettes, that growing in the virtue of continence, of saying, like, man, I'm just going to check my will on this, or it could be food or any number of things that they might have an attachment
master
to.
Of your domain.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. Essentially.
Yes. And so in this case, you know, having, you know, if that's the virtue that the engaged couples are being called to, being able to say, like, listen, I get it that, you know, your desires are all over the place.
Yes.
Your
yes.
will is strong and is seeking after this. But at the end of the day, you're going to grow in your capacity to live out your faith by taking this time to keep that will in check. Because if you can't keep your will in check and you're keeping your desires in check, how are any other virtues possible?
Well, and again, that same catechism paragraph says that there's going to be a discovery of mutual respect, an apprenticeship in fidelity, and hope of receiving one another from God. So it's like there are goods that happen based in this relationship. So if you've told folks, like, basically, and you've helped them to see, now I always approach the elephant in the room, especially when it's a smaller group, it's like, I will say, let's just say it, you guys are living in sin. And I say it with a big smile on my face, and they usually see it as like, oh, he's easing the tension, even though, and it's not an accusational thing. It's like, let's just all agree. Okay, let's just say what's out there, right?
You do have a ruler in hand at the time.
No, I don't do that.
That's
exactly right. So how we present these things and try to disarm them a little bit, say, look, I'm just saying this in jest. I want you to understand, yeah, it is sinful, but that's not what we're here to talk about, is your inability or your unwillingness or your obstinance or whatever it is. You know, it's not about that. This is about, here's an opportunity we have, right? And so what I talked to him about, and first and foremost, I want people to know, I want those couples to know, and also that I want people who have experienced this in their lives, people who have kids are going through this right now, that ours, you know, remember the first encyclical of Pope Benedict XVI, Deus Caritas Est, God is mercy, right? God is love. And so in love and in mercy, then all of a sudden you realize this is the God that you want to encounter and you need right now. And so there's an opportunity for mercy. So what I tell them is, and I start to build up on, is an opportunity to receive that mercy in the normative form of sacramental reconciliation, and help them to know that, like, look, there is nothing you can't go into the confessional and confess, and then you'll be reconciled, and you'll have this really holy opportunity to sort of lift yourself of the guilt, of the shame, right, and to be able to pour yourself into God's mercy. And when a couple does that before their marriage, and guys, everybody who's getting ready to get married needs to go to confession, because it's a sacrament. And there is grace that comes in this sacrament. But our actions, you know, our sinful actions particularly, they become like blockages. We talk about on the show all the time, don't we, Tom, about like going to confession is a way to, you know, unclog those arteries.
Wipe the slate clean.
And allow God's grace to flow freely. But there are blockages, and there are things that we self-impose. And so that when you go to confession, all that blockage is gone, and all of a sudden there's this free flow of grace that comes with the sacrament. It's a beautiful, beautiful opportunity. And so really, seriously, that's why at this time in their preparation, I encourage confession and say, you need to go to confession. Trust me. You just have to trust me that there's going to be this free flow of grace that comes from that, right? And then I also tell them a story that was really powerful to me. I went to a contemporary Christian rock concert years ago with it was an artist named Rebecca St. James, and I think she's still singing in contemporary Christian music. She had some really great music, and I remember, you know, there's always, when you go to a contemporary Christian concert, there's going to be a gospel message proclaimed. Mm-hmm. It's not just going to be music. There's going to be a time where all of a sudden, you know, the bass is going boom, and all of a sudden, there's a little music starts happening, and you know, and then all of a sudden, they start talking to you about Jesus, and they start talking about it, and they're building this thing up, right, an emotional thing. But and usually, I see that coming, and I'm a communicator. You call me a manipulator, if you will, you know, trying to convince people of certain things that they don't necessarily believe before, but they do afterwards. And there can be some manipulation, so I usually would tune that kind of stuff out because I understood what they were doing. I didn't think it was bad, but I don't like an emotional proclamation. But she started to say something that was like really powerful to me that really captivated me at the time. Well, she was talking about this idea that people have basically, there was like kids that were like between 13 and 16, 17 years old at this concert. She had a great appeal to the young folks. And she talked about this idea that people had fallen, right, in a sinful way and in a sexual way, right, and talking about young people. And you could see like young ladies that were kind of crying out there when she was saying this. And then she started talking about God being merciful and how there was God was the bringer of miracles, and that with God all things are possible. And then she starts talking about this idea that you could spiritually reclaim your virginity. Mm-hmm. And that always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. Right? And people think of virginity as something that physically happens, but you know, one of the things we love that's beautiful about the teachings of our church, it's not necessarily this physical thing. There's a physical component to what we understand virginity to mean. But there was this idea where you'd think, like, these kids were thinking, there's no way, I've already lost it. It's like, but you know, this is the beauty and the gift of God, and a God of love and a God of infinite mercy. You can regain it.
You know, and it's funny because people might think, oh, this is just sort of like a new Catholic teaching, like something that's modern or you know, to deal with modern issues. That's not the case. St. Thomas Aquinas talks about the virtue of virginity. Again, it's a virtue that his definition has nothing to do with your past, actually.
Right.
You know, it actually has to do with your a person who has the virtue of virginity has such a degree of purity that they interiorly they don't take delight. They don't allow themselves to take delight in like lustful thoughts and things like that. Right.
Right? You live the life of a virgin. I know that sounds weird, but it's not.
Right.
There's a beautiful, and this is why we stay close to the Virgin Mary.
Yes.
Right? We stay close to her because we want to live in that love and that way of love and how the church understands it and how it's proclaimed by God. And helping these couples who think that they've already lost their innocence, helping them to know that they can spiritually reclaim their innocence. And this is when I talk to the couples and say, look, I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm not going to check up on you. I'm just going to propose it now. And I will just tell you that it was very, very, there's people that have come back to me and said, thank you for doing that, for helping us and proposing this concept to us. But I tell people who are cohabiting, who have engaged in sexual relations before their marriage, I tell them whatever amount of time you have until the wedding, reclaim that innocence. Stop what you're doing. Either if it's impossible to do otherwise, live as brother and sister in separate rooms in your living residence, wherever you are, Or better yet, move into separate residences if you're able to. Move in with a family member, whatever. And essentially reclaim your innocence, and then have this time period, like where the church is saying that you're gonna, there's gonna be a time of testing, a discovery of mutual respect, and apprenticeship in fidelity, and the hope of receiving one another from God. And this level, you're gonna build this. First of all, there's gonna be mutual respect, and there's gonna be something powerful that happens in your being able to master your own domain, right? but also just really this idea of reclaiming your innocence. And essentially, you're going to anticipate that wedding night, and it's going to be such a beautiful wedding night. And it's just when this happens, people suddenly realize the proper place for this marital embrace, and then they see the fullness of their wedding, and those vows that they exchanged are no longer a mockery, right? And they speak their vows to each other every time that they come together. But on that wedding night, it's such a It's the consummation. And they can reclaim that. When people hear that, when people understand that, and when they live that, it's a game changer. So if you have cohabited, if you are cohabiting, if you're preparing for marriage, and even if you've maybe lived that life in your past, or if you have family or friends or children who are living that way, help them to see that God is loving and God is merciful, and there is always an opportunity that the divine healer will heal us. And there is an immensity of grace that is flowing from God and falling like rain upon us, if only we are to accept it and to realize just how much God loves us and how we can express ourselves in marital love with each other, and that makes that sacrament so much more beautiful. And let's ask the Blessed Virgin Mary to be with us on this journey. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and in the hour of our death. Amen.
Thanks for listening to The Catholic Cafe. If you'd like to contact Deacon Jeff, send him an email at deaconjeff@thecatholiccafe.com. Visit us on the web at thecatholiccafe.com. You can also find us on iTunes or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The Catholic Cafe is brought to you by the Order of Malta Federal Association. Join us again at the Catholic Cafe, serving up salvation one cup of coffee at a time.